Welcome into the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 590 The Fan only today for the next hour. It's Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar. Blue Jays, as you just heard, had a nice 4-0 win over the Rangers. Blair and Barker just broke it down for you, and we're pregaming really nothing.
Yeah, not much to pregame tonight when we were wedged between pregame, postgame, as we were yesterday. But yeah, salvaging one in Arlington, kind of a microcosm of the entire season today with Vladdy, 2 home runs, big day, inching closer and closer to 100 RBIs, and then we get the Bo Bichette news, which isn't great, of course. Yeah. So kind of the story of the two seasons for the superstars, the Blue Jays. Not that you want Vlad to come down from the perch he's on right now, but you know, it's like more likely than not that it's something a little closer to the middle for each of those guys, or at least for Bo Bichette. With next season, obviously, there's a lot of doubt about what next season could look like for Bo Bichette. But man, it's been a cursed year for him, it seems, while Vladdy's just on top of the world.
He's like a season from hell for Bo. He's coming back for that one game, and there's all the excitement about it. He got 2 hits, and then, boom, fractured his middle finger before taking ground balls for yesterday's game. So he's done for the rest of the season, and Vlad continues to cook, as you mentioned. It was a good game today with Kevin Gausman, but then it got a little nerve-wracking with he's pulled from the game with 58 pitches and was throwing a no-hitter at the time, but we find out he's got lower back tightness, so I guess that's lesser of two evils in a sense.
Sure.
It could be worse, but he said post-game that he knew that he didn't need to push himself, so he just pulled himself.
Yeah, but then again, like, I mean, you don't want to risk injury at any time, but this late in the season with the no-no going, maybe you want to try and pitch through it and give up the hit before you pull yourself, but maybe it doesn't matter all that much. But it just seems like that's so elusive, like the special moments when it comes to the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, Bowden Francis obviously
has been flirting with it. He knows next time Bowden Francis is out, they can get there.
It'd be nice to have something to get really excited about at the end of the season, but yeah, a little back tightness got in the way of that.
Okay, what we can get excited about is quite a few things from Leafs camp, and we're going to talk to Gord Stellick at 6:30. We'll be on the air just for an hour here before Sportsnet Tonight comes on for a couple hours, and Gordo will join us at 6:30. But with it being the first day on ice for the Leafs, we're starting to see, you know, line combinations, and Craig Berube has it set up into 3 different, you know, teams at camp in a sense. And William Nylander, if you've heard this one before, is going to start at center. That was last year's plan. Didn't last very long, just 2 preseason games, but he's going to start at center again this year. New coach, maybe new vibes around it. He was speaking to the media. This is what he had to say about starting at center this year, and we'll go through the pros and cons, but I thought Willie's response was quite funny.
I'm excited. I think that I told Chiefs that, I mean, the most important thing is, like, you can't just play one game if you want to try center. So, I mean, we agree on that and give it a go, and hopefully it goes well.
Why do you think the experiment didn't last very long at last camp?
You know, it seemed like you were...
What, did I play one game? Yeah, I don't know. I have to ask my old coach about that.
You'll have to ask my old coach about that. And when you watch the video, he's smiling.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing his little, you know, Willy smirk, but he mentions it. He only lasted 1-2 games last year, and it didn't get further than that. So we're doing this again. Should we be more optimistic that we'll learn something from William Nylander at center?
Yeah, I mean, based on that soundbite, I think there's probably renewed commitment to actually trying, and I think they will. But I guess more important than that, it seems to be very much a Brad Treliving idea, Brad Treliving thing that he wants to see. And if there was a criticism of Sheldon Keefe, it was that he was very rigid in what he was trying to do. I think he played it safe, maybe more than he should. He just didn't want to open the door to something that might fail. Maybe that's just the pressure of being in the market. We'll see what it's like in New Jersey this season. But he just felt like someone who played the hits, old reliable, always was going back to what had worked instead of trying to innovate. Even the best combinations, the new combinations, came out of necessity when there were injuries down the stretch, and he found new combinations. I think that's one thing that Sheldon Keefe really, really struggled with. But Treliving wanted it to happen last year. It didn't. Treliving seems to want it to happen this year, and we're going to see it. And we're going to see it, in, I think, for a variety of different reasons. But I think just to lengthen the lineup, to extend the talent across the lineup, is Chief among them, from Chief himself. Playing with Cali Yarncroke and Max Domi to start, I think, makes a lot of sense, because Domi as he's shown, has not been able to be effective in that center position. Mm-hmm. And if Nylander can take it from him and Yarncroke can sort of balance those two or offensive-minded players, maybe a top six turns into a legitimate top nine where you can rely on three lines to score goals.
Yeah, I think that having Yarncroke on his right there, like that safety net in a sense, a defensively responsible player, had to be a part of this, you know, first attempt. And I like Domi because Domi is also, you know, a guy that has some skill. And the most benefit from this, I think we'll see, is Willie. Obviously, people know Willie played center before when he was drafted as a center. So this isn't like brand new. It's not like Mitch Marner playing D, which was a fun, mm-hmm. a fun thing that they
another
threw out
thing
there.
That was abandoned
yeah,
fairly quickly.
A thing that they threw out there a year or two ago. But Willie's played center, so that's not going to be a complete shock. But when Willie can use his speed, his edge work, and he can use his playmaking, he's going to have the puck more on his stick. And as a centerman, he can transport it up the ice. And that's where I think we're going to see Willie's center magic. But the main thing that's been kind of the con of all this is Willie's not always the most defensively responsible. He likes to fly the zone, but obviously when you're playing center, you can't do that. And that's just going to take like reps and learning. And I would never want to upset Craig Berube. He scares me. So if I was William Nylander, I would just be more defensively responsible and not be flying the zone, but obviously completely different positioning with a winger and a centerman.
Well,
so,
you tell me, the position necessitates that, right? Like yeah. You can cheat way more as a winger.
Oh my God. When I played center, I was always envious of giving the puck to my wingers and then having to haul myself all the way up the ice to catch them because they were, you know, they were a whole zone ahead of me. And that's where he gets his breakaways. That's where he gets a lot of his opportunities to score. And maybe we see less of that from Willie, but seeing Willie maybe break the puck out, like get a pass from the D and be able to skate with the puck up the ice, that's where we're going to be like, this guy has a natural center skill set. He can dish it off to a winger on the side, you know, who has a better opportunity to go up the boards. I think that's where we'll really see the beauty of this. But I think there'll be some times where there'll be some hiccups where he's not getting back or he's missing his man coverage as a centerman. But this is what you do in preseason, and I guess this is the most important learning time.
Yeah, I think we got to see it to know that there's going to be those pitfalls, though. I think this is a smart player. I think this is a really smart player, mm-hmm. actually. And yeah, there are times where I guess the full 100% concentration lapses, but I think that would be part positioning, too. Like, if you're the centerman, you're in control mm-hmm. of everything that's happening. Yep. And you have to be dialed in, and maybe that will lead to more critical mistakes if the lapses happen at critical places on the ice. But I feel like this is something that could actually make William Nylander an even better player. I think we're guaranteed to see more than one game. We'll see if we get to 82, but I think this is the right thing to play with, at least early on in the season. I do think there's a long-term thing here as well, because if we look at the future of the Maple Leafs, and maybe if we're doing the window thing, like it could be more open in the future, or at least should be, despite the contract statuses of Mitch Marner and John Tavares. But if you look at this team moving forward, who's going to play center behind Austin Matthews? I mean, John Tavares, we expect to be with this team moving forward, but part of the, you know, the graduation process to the Jason Spezza transition program, as I call
it. Moving down the ladder a little bit.
Could be either moving down the ladder in the center or potentially moving to wing. So I think you have to figure out what you have. Mitch Marner's, I mean, they're talking about Mitch Marner potentially playing center as well online and maybe
that seems to be very desperate.
But yeah, you have to figure out who else is going to play center in the future. And I think if you figure out this year that William Nylander can be your number two center, can be dominant as a center in the National Hockey League, then it kind of solves or at least gives you a clear picture of what you have moving forward. But if you spend this entire season with Willie on the wing and Tavares comes back, but you're entertaining what might be to come, or the foot speed does slow down, or maybe that move is necessitated earlier than you think, then you got to look at what you got. And if you didn't have one of these centers, being at Austin Matthews or John Tavares, and then who else is playing up in the lineup right now? I guess it would be Max Domi. So I feel like they got to kind of figure out exactly who these three and a half players are, if you want to call Tavares the half, this season, because it's going to be a little bit more difficult, and there are no assurances that Tavares will even be here. So I think this is a good fact-finding mission in addition to something that may optimize the lineup today.
Yeah, to be honest, when we heard this, I think it was last week or a couple days ago when we first heard that he was going to play center, I was like, oh, here we go again. And I really didn't buy into it or see the validity of it. But when you mentioned like the future look ahead and the lack of depth that they have up the middle, it's worth it for the amount of preseason games he's going to get. And usually your stars don't play in maybe more than two. So does it trickle into a couple games in the regular season? How quick is Craig Berube to say this isn't working? Because they'll get a lot of practice in, but when it comes to games, which, you know, they start Sunday, I don't know how many games William Nylander is going to be in and be in with Domi and Yarncroak and be in that like specific line. I think they have to do it minimum two times, but usually you only see these guys get a couple games in. So if it graduates to the regular season, which I'm all for at this point, if you're going to do it, give it enough of a runway, which is what Sheldon Keefe didn't do at times, or he would just blender things without ever trying it. So give it enough of a runway where we know for sure that you don't need to try it again in, you know, January when things aren't working. So that's, we'll see what Craig Berube does, but he seemed like a man of his word.
And I don't think it's as binary, though, as like William Nylander passes or fails in the third line center position. It could be that, hey, you just don't have enough on the second line.
Yeah, or you try someone else with him, too.
Yeah, but what I mean is like, yeah, for sure you could do that, but you could also, it may be more about what the second line looks like, because right now the second line, I guess, includes John Tavares with Bobby McMahon and Nick Robertson or Max Pacioretty. And yeah, there's some names there. Mm-hmm. There's some talent there. There's some utility for sure there. But is that enough to be an acceptable second line for this team? Or do you need someone from that third line to assist John Tavares, to spell Bobby McMahon, to replace Max Pacioretty, who's blown the Achilles a million times?
I will say, I saw videos of him skating today, and he was blown by people.
Okay,
and I'm
go.
The one that I have not much faith in. So
you're
the biggest
Pacioretty detractor.
I had to admit it when I saw some videos from the first day of training camp. I said, oh, he looks pretty fast.
So, yeah, I mean, as much as is about Nylander, like, can he play the position? Mm-hmm. I think it's, can you afford to have him play that position and play away from all three of Mitch Marner, Auston Matthews, John Tavares? We'll see.
We will see. We'll definitely chat more about it with our guy, Gord Stellick, in about 15 minutes. And Gord and I will be doing the call on Sunday coming up. We'll have that on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's the Leafs and the Sens. First of two against them. A 7 o'clock puck drop here. And they're going to play the Sens twice. They're going to play the Canadiens twice. And they're going to play the Red Wings twice. And then season begins. So we're right around the corner. A couple other things. I'm over NHL expansion. Saw today that the owners are meeting soon. NHL owners will be meeting soon to approve an expansion opening. The leading candidates are Houston and Atlanta. I'm at the
two
point...
Two big American cities that you probably want.
But I'm just at the point where I don't think there's 34 teams of like really high caliber players. And then I also saw Kevin Weeks today saying that maybe one day we get to 36. And at some point we just need to stop.
Yeah, I agree with you. I definitely agree with
you. I know
you.
It brings money and there's excitement around it, but I don't know.
I think the thing that bothers me the most, because I do think the NHL is in a really good place from a talent perspective, I think that's going to continue. I don't think the game is suffering right now because Seattle's here. Like, I don't think it had any benefit, and I think the competition has only been better since the last two expansion teams came in. So I'm not really worried about that as much. I am worried about, like, you know, teams just never being good because there's so many. But I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But the thing that bothers me the most about this is that you just achieved symmetry, right?
Yes.
32 teams, 16 in each conference.
33.
8 in each division. It is perfect. It is there's competitive balance where you don't have one division that has more teams than the next and a conference that's easier to make the playoffs. And that's not really fair, but that's how it was for a really long time until Seattle arrived. And if you add two more, then I guess one goes to each conference. I guess Atlanta East, Houston West. But then one team has one fewer in the division, and it just feels like you had it. You had the NFL model where it's perfect, where it's four divisions with four teams and it's 16 per conference. Like, it was just, it is perfect. And the NFL doesn't mess with their thing. The NHL, I guess, is eager to mess with what I think is the perfect way to set up a league. They just, with the NHL, it's always like the path of least resistance to making money. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, that's the easiest way to bring $1 billion to invite another team in. I wish they were more innovative and looked at other leagues that don't need to rely on expansion to make money, like the NBA, who hasn't expanded in forever, like the NFL, who keeps to their 32-team model. But the NHL, that's been the most positive revenue driver that they've had, is bringing in expansion teams. And I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but then you might break it in the process.
I just looked at the last expansions for those other four, the other three major sports. And the last NFL expansion, as you mentioned, 2002 with Houston Texans. And that's a long time ago now. Last MLB expansion was when they added the Rockies and the Marlins in 1993. And then, 1998 was when the Diamondbacks and Tampa Bay Devil Rays began to play. And then the NBA wasn't since the Charlotte Bobcats or Hornets now in 2004.
And think about how big the NFL has always been, but gotten in the last 22 years since the last
one. And how big football is in America.
How much money an expansion team would bring, but they don't have to because they are everything to the viewer in the United States anyway.
And you never hear them talking about doing it either.
No, I think they're highly resistant to it.
Like, I wonder where they would be their first
Toronto
place,
Toronto talked
though.
About it forever.
Yeah, well,
and it was true. Like, it just seems like, no, you got to have Jacksonville or Buffalo back in the day because we ain't going to 33.
My thought about this NHL expansion that just seems like it's inevitable is there needs to be more Canadian franchises. I know we live in Canada, and I know this might sound biased, but it's just not enough. There's too many in America, and I understand Atlanta has had a history with it, and Houston is a good southern city. But I just think that there's an appetite. There's a lot of Canadian fans that probably would love another team in Canada, whether that's Quebec City, whether that's somewhere out east. Yeah. And I know we don't have the population that the United States does, but we have the passion.
Well, we do have a market that could in Quebec City.
Yeah.
And Utah getting Arizona.
Even Toronto times two, people
Toronto
are
Toronto times two. And yeah, maybe we get there one day. Maybe the Maple Leafs will never allow that. But yeah, there's space here. And there's money here, but they are steadfast in wanting to be in every major market, and Houston and Atlanta remain ones that they're not in. And if there's $1 billion to be made per, I can't see Gary Bettman saying no.
Well, can't wait to see the jersey launches for those. Because I think it's going to be the Utah Yeti.
Yeah, they seem to be.
I think they've kind of announced it accidentally.
And I think Utah's going to be a big success.
I think so too. And some of the players accidentally during their media day had mentioned like, "Oh yeah, Yeti." I mean, hockey club. So I think it's Yeti, which I'm excited about. Or Yeti.
I think Yeti's really good.
Yeti or Yetis? I don't know yet. Whatever. Okay, so more NHL adjacent or Canadian news. Thatcher Demko. So this is a big one, obviously, and we talked about this on our show yesterday. Or the day before, about what the potential training camp storylines will be. And obviously for Vancouver, it was what is going to happen with Thatcher Demko. So he met with the media today in Vancouver, and it's interesting. And this whole story has been interesting because there's not really been a lot of clarity. But this was the clarity from Thatcher Demko himself, saying that he has full confidence. He will get back to 100%, although there's no timeline. So he said that the recovery from this unique injury hasn't been linear, and he hit a wall during the summer, but has made some progress in the last few weeks. And this injury, which is a knee injury, a muscle injury, is so rare, he cannot find any case in history for it in hockey.
Is that not terrifying?
Yes.
There is absolutely no precedent for the injury
and
that
the
Thatcher Demko.
Goaltending in a knee, like, that's the worst. And to say that it's never happened in hockey, not just to say it's never really been seen in a goaltender, because, you know, that would make maybe some sense, but never in the history of hockey, and I'm sure he's gone around a lot of different doctors and a lot of different teams and met with specialists, can't find an example of this knee injury in hockey. So I don't know what kind of knee injury this is. Did it, like, grow a new knee? Like, I don't know what happened.
I'm curious now. I'd like to know
more. I'm trying to find out if they've, like, actually specified what it is. Just says a knee injury, a muscle injury. I don't know. But that, if you're a Canucks fan and you hear that, of course the player is going to say, I have 100% confidence I'm going to get back. Like, if they didn't say that, this would be code red.
Mm-hmm.
But how much can you believe in him saying, I'll be 100% when I even want to hear that from a doctor, not from the player who's obviously eager to play to be the number one goaltender and win a Stanley Cup and make money. So it's hard to take that without a little bit of anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, my last memory of Thatcher Demko, it was him being a surprise omission from his involvement in really important playoff games involving the Vancouver Canucks, right? Like, it came out of nowhere, it seemed. And if this thing can just reoccur out of nowhere or flare up or become a problem out of nowhere, I mean, I commend him for having the confidence, but I'm not sure how you can be that confident when there's no precedent to deal with an injury. If something is unprecedented, by definition, you don't know how to lean on history to deal with it.
Yeah.
And this is the exact situation afflicting the starting goaltender for a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations, wants to end Canada's Cup drought. This is a major, major storyline. And I would be, yeah, you know, you talk about curses and Vancouver, they had their own curses and things that they deal with. But this seems cursey. This seems awful. This seems like something that is potentially derailing. And we'll see. They got Shelovs
there
in Vancouver, who was great. Mm-hmm. And maybe they don't need Demko to be a great team. But I know Thatcher Demko is the best goaltender who was employed by the Vancouver Canucks. So this is definitely a blow for them.
And they lost Casey DeSmith in free agency, which I bet they probably would have held on to more if they knew the extent of this. We have a new article up on Sportsnet.ca, Ian McIntyre. And this is a quote from Demko today. "We haven't found a single hockey player. We found maybe less than 5 soccer guys. It's been a little frustrating of a summer just trying to get some answers. Obviously, we talked to specialists that we can in the world, in North America, even overseas." Well, that's part of the world. "And this information that we kind of gathered, myself and the staff and the organization, are confident we're on the right track, but it's been a bit, he's hit a bit of a wall." So I don't know. You took Ken. What kind of knee injury?
Well, again,
could this
if
be?
I had more information, maybe I could.
So it's kind of a soccer injury, but it's only been 5 or less. He said 5 or less soccer players with this injury. We got any doctors listening?
We need one of those players too, so we can like try to figure out what the injury is. But
well, it was overseas and the world that he called around. So
there are a lot of really smart people, and I'm not one of them, who can deal with sports injuries. So the fact that there's, again, and I'm kind of repeating myself, the fact that there is still mystery regarding it is terrifying.
Yeah.
Because there are trained professional sports, it's big business, athletes are immensely valuable commodities. They figure this stuff out, and they haven't with Demko.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right, let's do you want to do some quick best bets before we take a break?
Why not?
Okay, so Thursday Night Football, of course, no Jays in action tonight because they already won. So let's take a look at what's happening later. So I'm going to go from the Thursday Night Football game because I found this fun bet that we were all doing before the show. And it's on some specific books, but basically you can bet the triple crown of the evening. So who's going to have the most passing yards, receiving yards, and rushing yards of the game. And they have nice like little parlays for you. So for example, we have placed as a team bet a couple, but I think the one that we agreed upon, maybe feeling the most confident about, was Aaron Rodgers having the most passing yards, like starting there. I think that one seems pretty concrete.
Jacoby Brissett, pretty limited in what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like Aaron Rodgers, not prolific passing this year,
but he
still getting into the offense.
Jacoby
but
Brissett.
If you had to pick
yes.
the highest rated passer in this game, it would probably be Aaron Rodgers, yes.
So then this is where the receiving yards has a little bit, we've had a little bit of variance, but Alan Lazard is a great option. Breece Hall was my next option. I think those were the two that we bet the most. And then with rushing yards, we are all pretty big on Ramondre Stevenson, obviously, because the Patriots are going to give him the ball a lot. He's going to be rushing a lot. So when you parlay something like that, for example, I'm going to do Rodgers, Lazard, and Breece Hall. It's 23-1. So,
okay.
I mean, it's just like I feel pretty confident about one of those. The other two, you could switch them in and out. Maybe you do Lazard and Breece Hall. Maybe you do Lazard and Ramondre Stevenson. Maybe you do whatever you want. But it's a fun little way to pick 3 leaders in the game and put them into one parlay.
Right. I think for me, it's figuring out who's going to have a good night from the receiving standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know you played some Breece Hall, but I think Ramondre Stevenson, you know, is the best weapon on the Patriots offense and will probably be used tonight by the Patriots in a short week for a new coach. I think that you might rely on what works, and that might be Stevenson. So if you think it's a big Lazard night, Garrett Wilson night, whatever.
Yeah, Garrett Wilson.
Rodgers, Wilson, Stevenson makes a lot of sense. I'm sure that's a pretty short number. Rodgers, Lazard, Stevenson might
the
be
the lowest
a bit
one
longer.
You could bet was still 5-1.
There you go.
So even if you thought it was like, if it was Rodgers, Wilson, and I think it was Hall, or Rodgers, Wilson, and whoever the first.
Stevenson, probably.
Like plus 500, it's just kind of fun. So.
Indeed it is. I was looking at this game. I was kind of surprised, right? Because Aaron Rodgers has had a great career, clearly. Green Bay won a lot of football games. But Green Bay, at least anecdotally for me, wasn't a team that always blew teams out of the water. Kind of, you know, they were content winning by a field goal. They were content having Rodgers have like a 10-minute drive to close a game and not have to actually score a point. So I figured his record against the spread might not be that great, but it is 58% in his career against the spread, which is very, very good. The Jets are a 6-point favorite over the Patriots tonight. I kind of like the Jets, so I'll probably play the Jets because who doesn't want some action on a Thursday night game? But my favorite bet of the day, you know, I mean, Yusei Kikuchi guy.
Yeah.
The Astros have not lost a Yusei Kikuchi start yet.
What a good trade.
Three of the last four have been won by three or more runs. It is a favorable matchup for the Houston Astros with Kikuchi at home versus the Angels. So Astros alternate run line, -2.5, them to blow out the Angels with Kikuchi on the bump, plus 100. I'm backing my boy.
I love that. That's an immediate team bet for me. Okay, before we take a break, Shohei Ohtani got another stolen base. He's at 50 stolen bases. He just needs one home run.
Two home runs.
I don't know if he got one today. No, they're still playing, maybe. Nonetheless, he needs two home runs to make the 50-50 team for the first time ever. So he actually got his 50th and 51st steal.
Okay.
So he's already just surpassing it.
He's just rubbing it in our faces.
So he needs two home runs, and he's got how many more games? A few, at least, to do it.
I'll give him credit. You steal that 50th base, harder, you don't rest on your laurels, you get 51. I like
what's,
that.
What's harder, getting a home run or a stolen base?
I think probably the home run, right? You get more plate appearances than on-base appearances, but I think once you're on base, getting that stolen base for a guy capable of stealing bases would be easier than hitting one out of the park.
Well, I think he can do it at will, so.
We'll see.
So
games are winding down.
I'm still believing in him.
I think he'll get
that. Okay. Good. Let's take a break. We're going to talk to Gord Stellick on the other side about Leafs camp, look around the league, and see what's got Gord's eye about these lineup opportunities. Willie at center, maybe Marner at center. We'll see. We'll talk to Gord Stellick in a minute.
Etch Ohtani sends one in the air. Deep right field. He's in a world of his own. In 135 years of Dodger baseball, Shohei Ohtani, his 49 home runs, matching Sean Green for the most in a single season.
We're not even kidding. While we were talking about Shohei Ohtani, before we even pressed the break button, he had hit that home run. And so our lovely gentleman behind the glass helped us out and got it ready.
I'm pretty sure while we were trying to figure out whether it was 48 or 49, he just told us
so
how many home runs he
we
had.
We might
with
have
a
manifested that. And they're still in the sixth inning? He could get it tonight. But if not, they're playing the Rockies tomorrow, as you mentioned. So
yeah, they're in Miami right now. So he hits 49 and gets 51 in Miami. Gets to come home for at least the next six games, the Rockies and the Padres. And he gets to close the year, even if he doesn't get one over the next six games. Gets to go to Coors Field in Colorado where the ball flies out of the ballpark and he can hit a pop fly and potentially get 50. So, yeah, he's going to beat the Dodger record, 50-50 on deck. And he absolutely hammered that ball out of the ball. It was second decker. Like, Shohei Ohtani is an absolute freak. Awesome stuff.
I was going to say from one absolute freak to another, but I'll say from one legend to another. How about Gord Stellick joining us? Gordo, how are you?
I am great. I take either way. I don't know if I quite hit them in slow pitch like Shohei Ohtani, but, you know, it was nice to hear it. And also nice for us older people to hear a Sean Green reference as well. So I'm cool with the intro.
Okay, well, we're just bringing in the legends as we are. And Gord, you and I got the game on Sunday. I'm excited. Back at the rink. We got some Maple Leafs hockey. Are you all ready to get back in the cold, cold Scotiabank Arena?
It is cold. You know, okay. I mean, in some ways, got to stop complaining. But yeah, it is. You know, anyway, whatever. I'm ready. I know you are. You know, Ailish and Justin. I think the very best time of the year is the Stanley Cup playoffs. But it only is for 16 teams. There's 16 other teams really not thrilled. So then you get here, and it's kind of like, you know, you go back to school, there's a good feel, but, you know, I'm sorry, if you got a C in calculus, you ain't getting an A, okay? So you know that before the year starts. But right now, 32 teams are all thinking whatever their best case scenario is going to be a reality. And it's kind of a fun few weeks for that. And I very much look to being with you and, you know, seeing real, even though it's exhibition, seeing action on the ice on Sunday.
I like the way you put that. I've never really thought about that, that the best case scenario can be their reality. That means there is a gradient to things. The Anaheim Ducks are not winning the Stanley Cup this year, but they could have their very best season that's possible, yes, that's on the table for them. But I guess we should ask you what's on the table for the Maple Leafs. And if it is a perfect season for the Toronto Maple Leafs, does it end in a Stanley Cup? Are they good enough to be in that tier?
So I did say, I sound like I'm name dropping about Brendan Shannon. It's not really a big deal, but we were just texting about something else a while ago. And I mentioned I went to Las Vegas for the first time in 15 years with our family. And I did put $20 on the Leafs and $20 on the Bills. I've never done that before. Nice. I don't know if that will be the difference maker. But, you know, Justin and Ailish, the regular seasons, we've had nothing to complain about in Toronto. Some have been imperfect. Some have been phenomenal. But all in all, they've been in the playoffs. They've been in the dance. And then their parents picked them up early from the dance, right? You know, that's been the problem. So, again, we talk about, you know, game number 83 and we'll get to that down the road. I think one of the more interesting things of, because, hey, it's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of optimism. It's a lot of drivel. It's a lot of sound bites in the last couple of days. But I was really intrigued last year when I heard William Nylander was going to play center. And I think he played for about 2 days. So this year, you know, you got a new coach who, by the way, the last coach was excellent. But, you know, this guy says, you know, we're going to be a little bit more aggressive the way we go at things. Sheldon Keefe, we saw when he took over from Mike Babcock, was more puck possession. We saw that right away. But also about Nylander at center. And it's kind of saying, you know what, there's no more kid gloves about John Tavares. And I'm not taking a shot at him, but if he's going to be the number three center and that works best, he's going to be the number three center. Where before there was trepidation when Ryan O'Reilly came over about, you know, before he got hurt, how does it work? Who plays center? Who plays wing? And I hope they give Willie a really good chance about, okay, is that the best setup? And is there a Nick Robertson or Max Pacioretty or whomever, you know, that is the ultimate winger in the top six? So then you have you have that kind of depth at center. So I'm intrigued to see how this plays out. And I believe in this case, it'll be given a real good chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that at the top of our show, too. And we listened to some audio from William Nylander, who kind of jokingly said, like, well, no, it only happened, like, for two games last year. You got to ask my coach why. But I like the fact that I believe as well that he's going to get more of an opportunity this time around, because I think there is a lot of positives that could be gleaned from Willie playing center. You know, obviously, he was a center when he was drafted, but his ability to play make and how he can skate with the puck and maybe be more of a distributor, I think that that's the most important thing and what we might see. But obviously, as you know, the defensive issues at times would be the way in which you would see negatives with this. But skating alongside Domi and Yarncroke today was his line. How do you think those three could work together? There's a bit more defensively responsible with Yarncroke. Domi, you know, he can be a playmaker as well. And then Willie getting back to the middle. Like, I think that could be a nice starting point.
Yeah. You know, Ailish, first of all, Willie and the speed. Ever since, you know, John Tavares, to his credit, not the speediest of guys, but was the number one overall pick. And speed is really, you know, taking even more of a hold since he came into the league. So that's what I love about Willie. You're right about the center and the two-way responsibilities, which are really important, and you've got to hope, and I think he's grown in that way. And then if it's going to be Yarncroke, for argument's sake, you do have somebody who, you know, has a little bit more defense, I don't know, specialist, but abilities that way. So we'll see how the lines shake out. They end up changing all the time, but for a starting point, I am interested to see how this works, like mainly Willie at center, but I do like this kind of line. I thought Max Domi, man, when he filled in at center in the playoffs and what he did and really finding his way the second half of last season, you know, in an ideal world, Bertuzzi would still be here as well because they both did that. But I like Max Domi as that kind of fit that can do a lot of roles, whether it's going to be on wing with his line or not.
Yeah, Max Domi filling in some of the Tyler Bertuzzi role, but I think a lot of that will be Matthew Knies this year. And I'm interested to see how Matthew Knies enters the season, but also how he looks under Craig Berube. I mean, I guess the story's been, yeah, a lot of guys have put on some muscle. Matthew Knies is a guy capable of putting on some muscle for sure and is big already as is. I mean, he's going to get the start with the two big guns on the top line. Are you expecting big things this year from Matthew Knies?
You know, Justin, I was a guy that when he came in for the playoffs a couple of years ago, I threw caution to the wind because I've seen this act too many times, and he proved me wrong. Like, he really fit in and played really competently. I was very pleasantly, I don't know if surprised is the word, but whatever, with his play. And I'm a big Matthew Nyes booster, really big Matthew Nyes booster. And the other part is, in this salary cap world, and they have not had that for a number of years, if you're going to have these big contracts, you got to have entry-level deals. And they had basically none. And now they have Joseph Woll. I know it's a second contract, but I mean, you know, kind of a reasonable contract coming up at the entry-level. Matthew Nyes, entry-level. Easton Cowan, Fraser Minton. Like, they've got real prospects, which is really important in the cap world that you have that to balance off a bit. But I've really, you know, like, I always caution about all the hype, you know, all the time going, wait till they play. And I got to say that really Matthew Nyes is given full value. So I'm very bullish on him.
We're chatting with Gord Stellick, just a few days away from the first game of the preseason for the Maple Leafs. I want to ask you about Max Pacioretty, because this is going to be an interesting one. It seems like it's like one of those deals that might already be written. He's obviously on a PTO, but it sounds like they feel really confident about him. But he's got quite the injury history. He's a bit of an older player, maybe has some more miles left in him. And he also wears 67, which people think is... Maybe break the curse.
It's a bold move, Gord.
It's a bold move. What are your expectations from Max Pacioretty in his run here with the Maple Leafs?
Well, I think the last guy he wore it for 1 year, Robert Svala, and he played pretty well on D, and then he went back to the Czech Republic wearing number 67. The Toronto-Montreal rivalry, we got to see he was a solid, solid player for the Canadiens for all those years. But I know we're talking 2024. And, you know, the injuries have been so significant the last couple of years, you can't ignore them and dismiss them, but he's not going to be coming on, you know, a ridiculous deal. It's the kind of thing hoping to get his career back on track would be, a 1 year contract, that kind of thing. Last year, I will say constructively in Washington, you know, they lost Kuznetsov, they lost Nick Backstrom, you know, so he never had a great center to play with. So I know in a lot of ways, is it predicated on a great center? That's going to be his abilities. And I think he's proven that, no, he's bigger than that, but obviously, whether it's, you know, that top six thing might be pie in the sky or top nine, that. So I am really interested if he is healthy, and this, you know, you pick good situations when you're at that stage. He's picking, if he's healthy, a really good situation. So this could be a real pleasant surprise. And whether it's Bertuzzi or whatever role he fills in to a degree, that could be the possibility.
The bit of business that hangs over this entire season belongs to Mitch Marner and, I guess, Brad Treliving. Gord, you are a former general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. How would you handle, what are the best practices here with Mitch Marner, given the history, given the contracts, given the stakes, given what sort of bind this group has been in with four high-paid players for so long? Like, what should the Leafs do, and how should Brad Treliving handle this moment?
You know, it's a funny one, Justin, because it's kind of like if you're a kid and you go home to your parents and you go, Ailish doesn't like me. And you go, well, why do you hang with Ailish? Why do you hang with Gord and the other people that really like you? You know, like, Ailish isn't going to like you, but why don't you go hang with Gord? You know, and this is kind of like every time they talk, oh, the beleaguered Mitch Marner, I don't buy the script because we keep repeating it. And if you're talking about social media for the criticism, I mean, that's the lowest form to go by. I mean, he's one of the greatest Leafs I've ever seen. I love watching Mitch Marner. He's had, you know, been a first-team All-Star two times. But he also embodied last year in overtime that microcosm of what does it take to win a series, puck is dropped, and the little oomph extra thing, he don't do it. Morgan Riley hesitates, don't do it, and Boston wins in overtime. And that's not just him. Everybody else on the team has to understand that and grasp that, how small it is. And you got to be the ones on the positive side, not just him, but everyone else. So all I can tell you is, if you want to make it into strategy, I don't want to hear every Saturday the updates. We did that 6 years, 5 years ago about that, whatever. At the end of the season, I think a big difference now, the guy they had to sign was Auston Matthews, and they did. I'd love to keep Mitch Marner here, but I think there's an understanding that if he were to go, and it's not the end of the world because you pick up cap space and whatever. So let's go see. Let's have a Kawhi Leonard-type season for everybody on the team, and let's see in this case, he actually stays than rather than going to California. So I'm not going to get wrapped up in it because this whole thing has been an off-ice soap opera of a degree that's not necessary for far too long.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to see the full extent of the season, though, before, like, you know, meaningful contract talks are there? Like, would you be surprised? Would you be maybe scratching your head if on February 1st they come to terms on a deal despite what's happening with Marner's season and despite what the public is saying?
Yeah, great. No, good. Like, I mean, I want Brad Treliving to make good business decisions. Like, Edmonton, you know, St. Louis, here's a good example. You know, St. Louis saw Edmonton was vulnerable and offered what should be done more often, the RFA offer sheet. Good on them. Edmonton, understanding cap was really important, made a tough business decision that they would let the player go for less than really their value in the draft picks back. And that's, you know, Don Waddell did that in Carolina. You know what? Jeff Skinner, going to move him. Dougie Hamilton can't afford him. Moves on. So that is part of it. So when I say Brad Treliving, I trust, I'm being a little corny, but I just, that's part of the game right now. But I think whereas 5 years ago, you know, Mitch had them by the whatever you want to call it, even though it was an RFA, now it's understood that, okay, it's not the end of the world if you go somewhere else. But let's talk about playoff success. Let's talk about Mitch Marner, Auston Matthews, John Tavares, Morgan Riley, William Nylander, Conn Smythe candidates because they had a great, great playoff performance. That has not happened for Mitch Marner or any of those guys, and that is the one thing that's lacking. If that happens for any of them, I'm sure everyone will be happy.
Chatting with Gord Stellick ahead of the Leafs season or regular preseason starting in a few days. Where are you at with the goaltending? Joseph Woll and Anthony Stolarz have not really played more than half or less than a season when in terms of their most game played. And then you have Matt Murray there lurking in the distance. Is this going to be the Achilles heel once again when we look back at a Leafs season? We just didn't have that number one goaltender, or do you believe that one of those two or three can really stake the net as their own?
Ailish is kind of like my retirement plan. I hope it's good enough. Looks good on paper, you know? But can I get 82 games out of it? So anyway, I really like Joe Woll. I've always liked Joe Woll. Again, the injury thing, and it's not to be discounted, but I've just liked him as the kind of goaltender. They really have not developed a goaltender on purpose from within since Felix Potvin. I mean, James Reimer was kind of the accidental goaltender. But, you know, I like the way he's going and trending. You look at a guy on the other hand who, there's two guys, Laurent Brossoit, and going to Chicago because he really had a great year in Winnipeg. And same thing, having a great year in Florida. Like I know Roberto Luongo, got the glory, won the Stanley Cup, but really solid statistics. Not a backup goaltender, like really a 1B. So it doesn't give you the Swayman effect or the Vasilevskiy effect or the Bobrovsky effect to talk about Atlantic Division rivals. I agree there's an element of a question mark to it, but I'm big on him. The backup, I'm willing to be, hope he's decent enough and see what gives. So that's one to be answered, and we'll see how it goes.
Okay, we've hit the forward dynamic. We've hit the goaltending triumvirate, if you want to call it that, with Matt Murray. I guess we should talk about the defense for a second. I mean, I think all early expectations on Tanev are exactly as they should be. Tanev looks good. He is good. He's going to change the top pair for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But my opinion, Gord, is that Jake McCabe kind of holds the key because right now he's playing on the right side with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who was at times picked on a little bit on a playoff run to the Stanley Cup and to a Stanley Cup championship, but was a third pairing D on that team. If Jake McCabe can make the second pairing a profitable pairing, Is that what's going to make this Maple Leafs blue line thrive?
Yeah, I agree. And it showed last year the way Joel Edmondson played. I know he's gone somewhere else, but I'm sure they'll make a trade like that before the playoffs about playing a smart style. Like, there's no wow there. There's no Norris Trophy candidates there right now. There's no Victor Hedman, and we understand that. But that kind of style, good enough. And I do believe when you put all the pieces together, that is good enough. Now, the depth part, if they start getting injuries, and quite often D are the ones that get hurt the most, that's problematic.
And Chris Tanev probably going to get hurt at some point.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yes, I think so. But, like I said, they've put their chips in the forwards. They've doubled down. They've tripled down, quadrupled down on the big four up there. Morgan Riley's kind of number five. And I think good enough. But again, the best kind of D is if you get quality goaltending, which we talked about earlier. And then if the puck is in the other team's zone more often, we know that takes a lot of pressure off. So we shall see. That's why I'm saying, Justin, 32 teams are looking at it right now and go, okay, what if, and all the what ifs are positive, and then all of a sudden game number one or game number 10, you go, holy crap, there's a number of teams going, we're in trouble. So that's all the what ifs for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and all in all, I feel pretty good about them.
All right, Gordo, I'm going to see you on Sunday, and I can't wait to ask you all these same questions during every intermission, all right?
Well, maybe I'll wear a Sean Green throwback jersey. I don't know. We'll be there. Looking forward to it Sunday, being on the air. And, yeah, great chatting with you. Take care, Ailish.
Yeah,
take care, Justin.
So we'll see you soon. That's Gord Stellick. As we said, he's going to be jumping on a few of the Leafs broadcasts with us, and we start that on Sunday with a 7 p.m. puck drop against the Ottawa Senators here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Just to tie a bow, sorry for interrupting, quickly on Shohei Ohtani.
Did he get another one?
No. Oh. But it feels like he could. Again, he hit that in the sixth inning.
I want him to do it, not in the same game.
But here's why it kind of feels like it could be same game. He's currently 4-for-4 with a home run, 2 stolen bases, and 5 RBIs. He could put on the biggest single game performance en route to a milestone in maybe the history of sports. I guess that could be slight hyperbole, but what a story it would be if he went 5-for-5, got the 2 home runs, got the 2 stolen bases, and I guess added to that RBI total. Just a monster player, and he's going to have one more at bat probably in this game, so we'll see.
Okay, are they? I assume they're winning this game.
They are.
Okay, well, Dodgers, 9-3, top of the seventh. We could be seeing history again tonight. Speaking of history, Jaromir Jagr is like, I don't even understand aging backwards, but he has finally announced that this is probably the end of his hockey career. It was Rob Rossi reporting today that Jagr plans to retire after this year. And he plays obviously in the Czech team, which he owns and plays for. So he referred to it as his last season in an Instagram post on Tuesday. So kind of hinting at this is it, but this would be his guess.
How many seasons?
Yes, professional hockey season.
52 now, so 53 turning. I mean, it's 35, right? 37, wow.
37th professional season of his career. And then he already had a game on Wednesday night, and he set up the power play goal, the only one that they scored in a 5-1 loss. So he still got it.
I laced him up for the first time in 4 months yesterday.
And you felt
and
like Jagr?
This maybe should be my last year as well.
So maybe you and Jagr going out together.
Maybe first day of training camp, he was like, I don't know if I can do this.
But he's like a
but
weapon.
I'm going to do it.
You know?
He's unbelievable.
He is. So
he's one of the most fascinating and amazing athletes in the history of like
I think
sports.
So. Honestly, and if we had more time, we could build a whole segment around anyone that could kind of compare to Jaromir Jagr, and I think every time we'd be like there's no one like him. But if he does retire this season, he would be eligible for the Hockey Hall of Fame in 3 years, which would be 2028. So mark that down now. It's just about time, like, you know, we're waiting for you.
I'm plumb out of vacation, but this is your last chance to go to the Czech Republic and see Jaromir Jagr. I guess he's giving you the warning, right? If you want to see me one last time,
actually,
you better book a plane ticket to Prague or somewhere near Prague. Kladno?
We were just talking about Prague before the show.
We were.
So we manifested this
topic. So, yeah, last chance. Get those plane tickets.
He had, in his NHL regular season games, 1,700 regular season NHL games, and registered 766 goals, 1,155 assists, and 1,921 points, and played for a bunch of different teams.
Oh, the season has started, by the way, in Kladno.
Yeah, I told you.
Picked up an assist. Sorry, I was opening his DB.
Did I not just say that?
Sometimes I zone out.
You don't have to
bring too much attention to it.
Out.
But I will say,
he got an assist in the 5-1 game, yes.
It took me a second there because you have to scroll on his hockey DB.
I forgive you.
You have to scroll multiple times, and it took my attention away for a second.
That's okay, Justin. All right. We're done for our show today. We're going to set it to Sportsnet tonight with Sho and Mike. They're going to have you for the next 3 hours. And then tomorrow, Blue Jays are back in action. They get an earlier one, though. They play at 6:50 against the Rays. So it's a bit of a weird one. We'll be on at 6 o'clock, but just for a half hour before we send it to the pregame show. And then they've got a couple games against the Rays. And then they got their last homestand against the Red Sox. I got to get to one of those games.
Are you buying the New York Jets?
No.
No?
I'm not.
They haven't really put it together.
I was thinking Patriots to cover tonight, but I'll let you know
how
I feel about
it
tomorrow.
You're allowed to go there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So, yeah, Thursday Night Football, we had some best bets on that earlier. But enjoy sports and enjoy Sportsnet tonight with Sho and Mike. And we'll see you tomorrow, folks.
See ya.
Go Shohei.